show. Yes, we're here to discuss the week in Mac, and a lot's gone on and a lot of fun has been had. And Will Green can't join us this week, unfortunately, but I have a fantastic panel to assist me and go through the week in Mac, starting with, of course, the man who was one of the originators of this very show, Don McAllister.
Hello. Yeah, it's been a while. Yep, sorry, I've been...
just a little.
Otherwise doing bits and pieces, but yeah, nice to be back again. How are you?
Good. Yeah, all right, great, mate. I've had a busy old time myself, but I got a break in last week, which was nice.
Well, everything is just fine here, so we're looking forward to speaking to you a lot again.
I never knew you were a bass player, mate.
I've
seen guitars, but I've never seen basses in
background. No, I'm more of a bass player than a guitar player, to be honest. That used to be my main, when I was in a band, used to be bass player.
Everyone's been in a band, I hope. We should get a session band together. The BTN All Stars.
Yeah. I'm a bit rough around the edges, mind you. I'd have to harden my fingers up again.
I get the feeling that doesn't begin to describe what could be going on with the rest of us, but no, it could be awful. Next to him, join us for the first time, Mike. How you doing, sir?
I've got a guitar back here.
Yeah, so that's two.
I got a guitar, two keyboards. Yeah, let's start a band.
All we need is a drummer and someone who can't sing, and that's the complete set.
There you go.
That'll be good.
Hi, how's everybody doing?
Yeah, we're grand, man. We're grand. Whereabouts are you and what do you do?
Because I am in New Jersey. I am a software engineer. I do iOS apps. That's my thing.
Excellent.
And then I do podcasting, of course, on the side.
Yeah, good man. We like that. Next to him, someone who can sing, and I have seen play the guitar, and I can verify you can do that as well. Welcome back, Mr. Brian Chaffin.
Hello. It's good to be here. Thank you.
Your audio is a little whizzy, but based on the fact we've had all that shit with your audio, I'm not going to be too worried about it. With your video, rather. What have you been up to, mate?
Oh, goodness, moving. There's some boxes behind me. You can see that. Still not unpacked yet. That's been the big thing. And shopping a novel, which is not related at all to, technology.
You're writing a novel. Good man. Like that. Could you restart your audio for us, mate? Because it's really choppy. Is it choppy for everyone else or is it just me?
Yeah, pretty choppy. It's
pretty choppy.
It's crunchy.
Will do.
Cheers, man. Thanks. And last but by no means least, the man with the Marmite.
Yeah.
Drum roll, please. There. Here he is. Look, it's Adam Christensen. How's it going, pal?
It's going good.
I see you got your care package.
I got this lovely thing through the Royal Post.
Yeah, Royal Mail.
Royal Mail, I guess it is.
They didn't squash yours. The squash docks.
Oh, it's squished on the back.
Yeah.
But I have a feeling it doesn't care.
No.
I think it can take it.
You're not the only one that's got a challenge because Gavin Portage, I want to say thank you to Gavin because he was a guy who went around a hotel in Norfolk picking up all those samples for me in the week that he was staying there. And then he dropped them through my door. He actually brought them to Birmingham and dropped them through the door. So thank you, Gavin. You are BTNer of the year without a doubt. You get immense props for that. And then I've taken me time, but I've posted them all out to everyone and they've got it. But at the same time, Smiley and the Blackie Bob in Australia have sent me Vegemite, and this is genuine Aussie Vegemite.
I have a jar of that
to try. Okay.
Here. Well, I don't need to send that to me if we're doing that.
We're forcing Adam to try Marmite in a second, but just to get his own back, I will be getting Vegemite, and this one is Vegemite, the darker one, and I've got one with Marmite on just to take the taste away afterwards if it's horrible. Whereas Adam,
isn't it the same stuff?
Adam, I feel may not be that well prepared. No, it's not. I think it definitely tastes different. So we'll start with you, Adam. Do the drum roll. Here we go.
Wait, I gotta get the Marmite on here. I haven't opened it because I was worried about the smell.
Okay.
All right. So
yeah, you are in a confined space.
Oh my god, it looks awful.
It's treacly inconsistency. Well, I'll do my Vegemite then first. So here we go.
Yeah, you do the Vegemite. And so, you tell me how it's different than this Marmite.
Smiley in the Blackie Bob sent me Vegemite, so I'm going to try that. Here we go. I've gone for a thicker corner of the stuff just to prove I'm a real man.
It actually doesn't smell too bad. Mm.
Now, I tried a bit of that on its own, straight out the jar, and it was disgusting.
What does it taste like?
It tastes yeasty, but it tastes... there's a lot more beefiness in the Vegemite than there is in Marmite.
Hmm.
But I hated it off the spoon. But actually on toast, it's not bad.
All right.
I may actually finish this slice.
Now, I went with Don's recommendation of a light.
Yeah, just to give you a taste.
Let's have a quick look, see how much you put on. Yeah, that'd be good. Just have that part in that corner. That'd be fine. Here we go.
Ugh.
Oh, he doesn't hate it.
Ugh.
Oh, he hates it.
It's salty.
Is it supposed to
be kind of salty?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh. It kind of, at first it kind of gave me a hint of almost like, not a marinade, like Worcestershire.
No. A little bit. Okay, I get that, but it's not spicy in any way. But
yeah, no.
It's extracted brewing.
It wasn't as awful as I thought it would be. I'll give it that.
It's made out of the sludge that's at the bottom of the brewing tanks. And there's a place up here, Burton. So when you buy Cobra beer, which is genuine, authentic Indian beer, which is actually brewed in Burton-on-Trent, 20, 30 miles up the road, all that stuff, there's Marmite tricks coming out everywhere because they give it away free of charge, effectively. And they make...
Yeah, I understand why.
Make this with it. And I've got to say,
I can't. There's no way.
I was quite prepared to spew up this Vegemite because it was horrible out of the thing, but it's actually really quite nice on toast. That might get used after all. I may even ask for some more.
You may need a peanut butter chaser on that one.
Yeah, no, not a great peanut butter lover. So thumbs up on the Vegemite. It's okay. Not too bad.
But you like the Marmite.
I love Marmite. Yeah, Marmite. We're a Marmite family, most definitely. Apart from your daughter.
All right, I gotta eat just some plain bagel so I can get this taste on my mouth. Yeah, maybe it'll never go away.
We'll be doing Kelly next week. She'll be on the big show, and she's going to have her Marmite then. And Doc's already tried his last night on the big show, and he likes it. He loves it. I'm going to have to send him a full jar, apparently. So I'll get the biggest jar.
I'll send him my extra pack.
And I'll send it out to him. We've had a couple of reviews. we've had a couple of emails as well. I'll start you off with one from... I've got to say, I really, really love getting the ones from people where they're really clearly massively pissed off with me. Because they just, all kind of etiquette goes out the door. So I've had one from Stephen Chambers, and he doesn't even write, Dear Ewan, Hello Ewan, Hi Ewan, Ewan, or even You Wanker. He just goes straight into it. How do you expect to keep or increase audience when your shows are so erratic? And he spelled erratic like I'm pissed off, not erratic as in they're not very often. Let someone else take on the rein, and he spelt rein like I was a king, rather than holding some reins. If workload is too much, get Will Green to host the Mac show and combine the photo show and the big show as well. We only let Will Green do this show once a year, and that's under very, very close supervision. I can promise you. There's always an adult present. Less is more. Plus, you swear too much. Be more like Leo Laporte. He doesn't swear. I've got some video of Leo Laporte swearing. I can promise you he does. You could be bigger if you used your brain and not make it all about yourself. Aim at younger viewer, not a load of old drunks in a pub. Do the beer show if you want to be a drunk, and tech up others if you guaranteed shows on regular basis I would support, but net as is no twit as my vote. I don't know what language he was writing at the end of it. You won't donate anything, mate, because you would have done it by now if you were going to. So, and if you want to write and complain to me, that's fine. I don't mind. I'm okay with it. I don't take offense. But please start with a salutation. That's all I'm asking.
You know, I'm gonna say I think he was pretty much spot on.
Yeah, that's fine. That's okay. I don't mind that. Dear Ewan, that bloke that wrote in is spot on. There is a certain advice that I would give to people as well. If you don't like the show, don't fucking listen, okay? There you go.
You know you're doing something right when you get hate mail.
Oh, yeah, that's what I love it. The thing is as well that people write in with some of the steamiest stuff that's really, really trying to be offensive. But A, I love laughing at it because it's hilarious because they make themselves look idiots. But they don't realise I get a whole week to think of a reply. I've gone through several drafts.
Did you have a regular schedule at some point? See, here's how I worked it out is I've never had a regular schedule. I don't have a date, but most podcasts do. So I think most people come to expect it. But somehow I was able to convince my audience that, you know, I would do a show when I was able to do a show.
Yeah, well, I try and
just worked out.
We try and do a big show every Thursday and a Mac show every Friday.
Right.
And I try and do the photo show every Friday, but
that's the problem. You set a schedule. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think they also get pissed off at the posting time. I try and make sure everything's posted by Monday, which is why I did a song, Get Your Downloads by Monday, a few years ago.
I can't work under that kind of pressure.
I got my workflow pretty good. It comes out fairly easily now, but it's just like little things get in the way. And if I post it on Tuesday, you get email on Monday going, I hope there's not a problem or anything, you know, just where's the show? And a lot of them are really nice emails saying, I hope you're all right and you're not dead under a bus, because I really do want my show more than I want to know whether you're okay or not.
Yeah, most people are excellent.
Yeah, but that's just down to people's OCD, I think. Don't worry about it. We got another one, though. Thank you very much to Ken in Mississippi. It makes it sound like I've made it up, but I haven't. It was the combination of you and Will that made me love the show so much when I first came upon it years back. It was entertaining, fun, informative, all at the same time. Your regular lineup with Will, Kelly and Ewan, plus Don, Adam, etc. is perfect. Not sure about Alison Sheridan, though.
Why does Alison always
There's a club. There's you, me and Chuck Joyner in that. Tell them for me that if they don't like Will on the show, don't bloody watch. No, yeah, stuff it. Thank you, Ken. Do appreciate that. Also, Shembring has written, great show. It just keeps on getting better and better. It's funny, informative, and in my opinion, it's one of the best podcasts around for information on Apple and their product ranges. It's up there with the great Apple-based products like Leah Laporte's MacBreak Weekly and Adam Christensen's MacCast.
Isn't that sweet?
There we go. And Night Flight says, I'm completely addicted. That's very kind of you all. Thank you ever so much for sending that stuff. Oh, lucky as well. I forgot this one. Long-time Mac user. Love all the things Apple. I've been listening to Apple podcasts for years. This is without doubt my favourite, though, not just because for a change it's actually British, but it's funny and informative as well. Plus, being in London, the British sense of humour and the likes of Ewan and Greetings always welcome in my book. Also, I'm proud Patreon donator. Long may the Mac show continue. And thank you very much to Lucky Luxy for that, because we do rely on Patreon donations. We've just bought a new laptop for the green screen up in the Northern Studio and up in Edinburgh that Paul Wheatley does. If you haven't listened to it, you've got to listen to the Pocket Show. It's on Monday night coming up, and he takes an iOS user, an Android user, and a Windows phone user, and it's about mobile platforms, and it's a comparison, and they actually end up agreeing with each other on lots of things and stealing, I didn't know that did that, and that sounds really cool, and it's a really good format. So check out some of the other shows that we've got, and Patreon donation, if you'd like to donate, anything that you can give us is great. Thank you very much. It's patreon.com/British Tech Network. But one of the things that we are committed to now is the daily show. So the news show every single day is done by Kyle Swagger, who's a regular on this show as well, but he's back doing stuff for the NBA at the moment. And he said, I've got to stop the show. And we said, no. He said, well, I could find the time, but the problem is I've got other clients that I need to do on top of NBA, so therefore I can't do voiceovers and do the daily show. And I said, well, how much do they pay you? And he said, well, if you gave me $250 a month, I could probably replace some of those so that I could get time to do the show. So from the Patreon donations now, we are funding Kyle to do the new show each day. It costs us $250 a month, and anything that you can send in to support that and show value to that show would be really, really welcome. Thank you very much. We're well over $600 now per month at the moment, which is great. Thank you ever so much to everyone who sent anything in.
And you're welcome.
Thanks, Mac. And there's lots of reviews here. Very pleased to see the addition of to the British Tech Network of the Daily Show. A lot of people saying that they missed the Daily Show immensely. And I can't start my day, this is Heron Lynn, without listening to this super podcast. Just the right length. It's hard to get into the important news in such a short package of time, but BTN have managed it. Well done, Kyle. And dump the backing track. It pisses me off. There you go. Sorry, mate. But please, if you can, support us through patreon.com. And if you'd like to just support the network anyway, then one of the things you can do is give us a review in iTunes. Read them all out, good or bad, and it boosts our rankings significantly in iTunes as well as. So thanks to anyone who does anything at all. If you're a developer and you can write a program for us, you can write a podcatcher for us, anything like that, then please, please, please go ahead and do it. You don't have to give a Patreon donation to support us. We really appreciate all the people that are around the network and giving us so much help and pleasure and enjoyment. We do enjoy doing the podcasts. And like I said, if you don't like them, don't listen. Simple, not hard. The Week in Apple, right. Now we've got the Marmite and the reviews out of the way. Let's start off with, Mike, you picked this story up straight away. Apple said to be stopping the use of TLC NAND flash in iPhone 6 and 6 Plus after reported issues in the higher capacity versions of the devices. They've gone from TLC, triple cell, level cell, to MLC, multi-level cell. What's the specifics of what's been going on with this then? Is there, there's been restart or reboot errors or something with it, isn't there?
Supposedly that's the case. I can tell you that my iPhone 6 Plus, I see the white Apple logo way, way more than I'd like. And I don't know why it is.
My
iPhone 6 Plus has not had a single problem since I got it.
Yeah. I was considering doing a, and I hate doing this, restore and setup as new, just to make sure I rule out any software thing. And then I saw this article pop up, but I thought I also saw, I think I bookmarked it. I'm going to try and find it for you guys now. Somebody saying that, this is being reported, but it's really probably not the case, but I hadn't read the article yet. So
okay. It's always chancy making conclusions from anything in the supply chain these days.
Right.
Is that where this information's come from then?
I believe so, but I don't know for sure. So maybe, I'm just kind of spouting off.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing that kind of bothers me is I've got 128 gig 6 Plus. I absolutely love it. I'm glad I went back to Windows Phone from Windows Phone. But if it's got known faulty flash in there and I have the larger device, but I've got no apparent issue showing, are they going to give me kind of, they're not going to give me a recall on it, but are they going to extend my warranty, if you like, for, I've got 2 years anyway. But.
I'm getting a feeling because this seems to be very isolated and the thread that sort of started this on Apple support forums is not super large. There may be some sort of defect, but it's probably a very limited batch is what I'm guessing. It's the classic thing. Apple makes, tens of millions of these things and, there's going to be some coming out of the factory that maybe have an issue. So got through QA, something like that. So yeah. I think this is going to be more of a case by case basis. So I may very well, if mine continues, I'll take it in and have them look at it and, they'll probably just swap it out and everybody will move on with their lives.
Maybe the correlation between the bad RAM and bending.
So if you've bent it and the RAM's bad, then you the get preference.
Yeah, I know. People talking about how the iPhone 6 bending is a quote unquote problem when they've sold 20 million of them, but there are only like, 9 officially reported ones?
Yeah.
I'm sure that's the new way of popping the RAM out, though, isn't it? You bend it and the RAM just sort of pop. And then
hold on, though. There were 9 in the first few days after this became an issue. We don't know how many have been reported since.
Or replaced
somebody
since.
Posted a video of a couple hundred on YouTube that were bent. So they scoured the internet and found probably every image of a bent iPhone that exists and put them all into a YouTube video. But even if it's hundreds, even if it's thousands, that's such a small percentage of the total that are out there.
That's true.
But that's
as for the RAM, I keep my eye on a lot of forums and such. And today was the first day that I heard of anybody having problems like this with the iPhone 6 or 6 Plus. So I don't know.
The only problems that I have, I just put down to, iOS 8 being so new. Because I had a few, it's been a little bit, I've got a 6 Plus 128 gig as well, and it's been a bit flaky, but I put it down to the software rather than a physical problem with it. Because I've not had any sort of real hard reboots. Just applications flaking out on me now and again. It does seem to settle down recently.
What's interesting is I have been getting, since I got the 6 Plus, I've been getting a couple a week. And I never saw them before. What's weird about it is it's not, I see the white Apple logo, but it's not like when you hold the home sleep wake button reset, it doesn't take that long. It's a much sort of quicker one. And I found I can get them to happen further apart if I do take a moment and do the full, hard reset with holding the sleep wake and home button. And then I see fewer of them, but, over time they will start to build up again. So that's why when I, read about this NAND thing, I thought, well, maybe there's something going on here as I'm installing new apps and things like that. Yeah. So, I'm not saying it is or isn't at this point, but I am saying I have an iPhone 6 Plus that is exhibiting the kind of behavior that's being described. I don't know why it is. And I'll continue to investigate. But I think, at the end of it, you know, first thing I'm going to do is try to do another restore, you know, in iTunes. And then if that doesn't work, I continue to have the problem, then, you know, I'll just take it to Apple. And like I said, they will probably take care of it in one form or another. So not too worried about it.
Yeah, if it's not a mass recall, they'll just swap it out of the store, won't they? I did hear rumors that they were going to do a recall, but I don't think there's any.
It doesn't sound like there's enough, you know, nearly yes, enough people reporting this problem.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, I think the only thing I would say is if you're right, I mean, you've got 10 million out there and then say 2,000 people are holding their hands up saying something's wrong, that is a drop in the ocean of the global scale of things. And it's probably the kind of, I mean, you know, you're not Six Sigma at that point, but, you know, it's still good performance. But at the point that you get to the journalistic element of it, 2,000 people are holding their hand up are not going to be ignored.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's the problem of it, I suppose. I think that's one story, though, that if you're in the UK or in the EU, is worth kind of putting into Flipboard or something like that, or putting into Evernote. And when something does go wrong with your phone in up to 2 years' time, say, known issue, awfully sorry. And especially in the UK, because even beyond the two-year European warranty for electronic goods, if you can show a known issue has recurred at 6, 7, 8 years, you'll still be entitled to your money back, because it can show that it was defective at time of sale.
Well, what kind of masochist is going to use an 8-year-old iPhone?
You're looking at him.
you've got to be filled with a lot of self-hatred.
You're looking at that point. No. I just do that kind of stuff just because I enjoy making shit. There we go. Apple is sending emails to encourage users to upgrade to iOS. It would seem that their proud boasts about number of uptakes to new OSs. It hasn't worked. iOS 7, there was something stupid like 98% within 5 days, but iOS 8 is not. Did I say 8? I meant 7. iOS 8 doesn't seem to be taken up in the same way at all.
59%. No, well, it had that iOS 801 scare. So I think a lot of people are a little afraid of upgrading. But now, and like 8.1 has been very stable for me. I don't have a problem with it. So,
Yeah, 8.1 has been solid.
I've had no problems. In fact, actually, my phone's still running 8. It's my tablet that's running 8.1.
And, I think it's a combination of things, isn't it? I think it's the fact that, you know, with iOS 7, it was a whole new look and people were curious to see, you know, what it looked like. So let's go ahead and upgrade and get this new look. Whereas iOS 8, it's very much, although there's probably more in iOS 8 under the covers, you know, with the extra functionality, but the actual, the cosmetic appearance of it doesn't change pretty much. So people are saying, well, I don't really understand what the benefits are, so I'll hang fire for now. And then there was also that problem of it not fitting on some devices, you know, needing was it 5 gig of free space to actually do the upgrade?
Well, that was an over-the-air thing, wasn't it? If you plugged
if
in...
If you do it over-the-air, yeah. But again, I think most people do it that way now. I think very few people actually connect their iPhones to their, you know, to their Mac or to their PC to manage it. It's all done over-the-air.
That's probably what's adding to this number, because there are a lot of people with smaller devices. And this gets back to something I think we've talked about on the show before, where, you know, I think Apple's doing a real disservice to their customers offering a 16 gigabyte model at this point for most people.
Yeah.
Why they're not doing 32 as the base is just, hey, that's wrong. So I think hopefully, you know, with this upgrade thing, they got bit by it a little bit, because all those folks with 16 gig devices, you know, they're so full, they can't do the over-the-air thing. And the over-the-air has only been around for a couple of years. So, you know, you can't compare those past numbers when people had to dock their phones and upgrade versus sort of what's happening now. So I don't know how big that impact was, but I had to factor into it to a certain degree.
But the OS isn't taking up 5 gig of the 16 gig phone,
yeah,
though, is it?
Yeah, but here's the process, right? They download and stash that so that if there's a problem during the actual upgrade process, they can actually restore you back to, you know, what you had before, so your phone isn't bricked. So
it's almost like you need 2 copies of an operating system on your phone.
Right, exactly. For a short amount of time, you've got the old OS and the new OS, you know, and they have some sort of, I'm pretty sure they have some sort of process to roll back. So if everything goes south in the middle of that upgrade, you know, you're not left with a device that doesn't work, which would be far worse than just saying, hey, look, you're out of space. You can't, you know, connect to iTunes if you want to run this upgrade.
I've also seen even more complaints for the oldest generation of device that's supported with iOS 8, which would be iPad 2 and what, iPhone 4?
4S.
than we saw with previous versions of iOS. I'm at the, actually very specifically at the point where I don't think anyone running those generation of devices should be running iOS 8.
I've got iOS 8 on my iPad too because I'm a developer, so I need it for testing, and it runs fine. The iPhone 4, though, I refuse to update that thing to iOS 8. I just won't do it. But my iPad 2 has been running. It's sitting here right next to me, and I run testing on it. It runs pretty fast. It's not bad. But then again, the apps that I have, like I'm not running like, Unreal Engine or anything on it. So,
yeah, that's interesting. The iPad 2 is what I've gotten the most complaints about. I've got a particular reader in particular who is particularly had some particular problems. I'm sorry, that's ridiculous. But anyway, iPad 2 complaints have been the loudest of the iOS 8 complaints that I've seen.
You know, one thing that I wonder with iOS 2 is a lot of folks, when they're doing their upgrades, probably had, when you got your 4, your 4S, what operating system was on there, I don't even remember. But you've done an over-the-top upgrade, you've done an over-the-top upgrade, you've done an over-the-top upgrade, and you've never done a restore. I sometimes wonder how many of those folks are out there. And now they get to iOS 8, and, it's just, there's, again, their phone is overloaded, they've got a bunch of X stuff on there. They've never done, a restore and, restore from backup.
I'm not proving you right, Adam, but you may have a point because this iPad 2, I did actually wipe it for iOS 8 beta. And the day that iOS 8 beta came out for developers, I did a clean install on this iPad 2, and it wouldn't take. It got halfway through the install, and it kept saying, I forgot what the error was, but a ton of developers were saying the same thing about their iPad 2s. So maybe that has something to do with it. I don't know, but I did wipe it.
And people wouldn't know. I mean, this is more of an Apple issue in terms of just, informing customers. I mean, most people, if your phone's running fine and the upgrades come out and they apply and you don't have problems, and then all you're noticing is, oh, my phone, I just ran iOS 8 and things are kind of slow, or, things like that. Honestly, another thing related on my 6 Plus, and I don't know if anybody else gets this, the other thing that happens to me a lot is mine will just completely go unresponsive for 15, 20 seconds. So I'll open an app and every touch will not work.
That doesn't happen to me, but what does happen to me, and this happened also with my iPhone 5, is that sometimes when I get a phone call and you have to swipe to answer the phone, it just, like, I'm swiping on the phone and nothing happens.
But that's doing that on the 6 Plus for me once in a while.
Yeah, that was happening on the iPhone 5.
Yeah.
These problems on the iPhone 6, for what that's worth.
At this point, if Greeny was here, he'd be just calling it a glitchy piece of shit, like he normally does.
I think the 6 Plus being, a really new form factor, it just probably has some bugs and some oddities that need to be worked out, so... Awesome. That's kind of what I'm coming to.
Be stable by iOS 9.
Well, I had to change a few things in my apps because of the iPhone 6 Plus scaling issue. You can't just plop something up on the screen like you used to because everything was scaled to 1.0. Now it's scaled to 3.0. So maybe there are some things there. I don't know. But I know that I had to make some, not drastic changes, but some different changes for my apps to make sure that everything was placed properly and works properly.
Some comments from the chat room, they're chiming in. Big Russ is saying, I've got a 64 gig 6 Plus, I got no issues, very happy so far. He's also saying he's quite surprised it didn't go up more, even as a jailbreak is out for it. Windrider says, I'll do it over the air only if there's space. He's also said he's got a 4S, which is running iOS 8 at the moment and not got any problems. But to be fair, he doesn't use it much as a phone. So it's not, just a tablet device effectively, I suppose. And Smock says, I think the 16 gig is targeted as a corporate device where you don't allow users to install extra applications.
I think it's just Apple cheaping out on RAM. I'm sorry. There's just the prices that they're paying for RAM, it can't. I think they're just eking extra profit out of there, and they keep that low price point, which gets people on board.
They overbought and then, 16 and they gig. Move up.
Huh?
They overbought 16 gig a few years back.
It's not just one chip, right? It's I don't know.
No one bought it 2 years ago, so now they're left holding the baby. Never mind. I've got one thing I was going to say, though, is I love my 6 Plus, but when I got it, I had to do an over-the-air restart because it didn't recognize the tapped code that I put in. I'd put in what I thought it was, and it said, every time I put it in, it said, nope. So I had to find it and wipe it remotely, and now it works fine. But the problem is, every time I plug it into my computer, iTunes goes, right, do you want to set this up as a brand new iPhone? Hmm. And you're like, well, no, hang on, it's got... This is what I can understand why it's done, but it's security to the degree that it doesn't need it. This is my phone. It's got my same login as my iTunes account. The iTunes on the computer, the computer's got the same username, and iTunes has got the same username. Why can't it just associate and just realize that that is my iPhone? It's called Ewan's iPhone as well as. And the fact that it won't let me do anything unless I make a complete new iPhone to then link it to my computer. I can't do over the air or anything like that with my computer at all. It has to be tied to it to then make it, and then it'll let me do it, but not if I just do it as a setup, as a standalone iPhone.
That's because you wiped it remotely, right?
I had to wipe the phone remotely, but I'd never tethered it to a computer at all. I just started it.
Right.
But if it's set up as with my iTunes account username, the same as my computer username for, you know, my .Mac account, and also then for my iTunes account on the computer. How that cannot just realize that is in the same family is beyond me. Ridiculous. So everything I want to send between the computer and the phone, I've either got to link them up and use image capture to transfer stuff, or I've got to send it up to the cloud and back down and out the other side. I can't do a document drag across for like Pages documents or anything like that. Which is pointless. Just ridiculous. There you go, Apple. Problem solved this week. what else have we got? I just wanted to talk, because last night we had Ashley Escada on the big show, and unfortunately we lost the audio on it, so her section's not going to come out. And we're not going to talk about it tonight on the big show. Amazon released the Echo. It's a speaker with Siri voice-like assistance. And I just wondered what your thoughts were on it. We had a good conversation last night about what it was doing in your house and whether it was owned by the Stasi and not by Amazon. But, I mean, there was a big thing about, you know, who's going to buy this? And everyone said, no, I wouldn't. And what would you see as a use for it? I have no clue. It's just kind of cool. But then I probably wouldn't use it after 6 weeks. I just wonder what you guys thought.
I think it would be great, you know, if it was Siri on my Apple TV. I worry about where it's coming from. I mean, it's kind of cool and would be fun, but you know, if I have my iPhone plugged in, I've got the whole, you know, Ola Siri thing that I can do and kind of get the same sort of functionality. So, you know, my concern is like, it's going to definitely be completely tied into Amazon and Amazon Prime. So like even in the video they showed, oh, add stuff to your shopping list. Well, guess what the shopping list is? That's your Amazon list. Right. And they're going to be watching to see what you put on there so that then they can, you know, offer you up all sorts of stuff. So, you know, maybe people like that. Maybe people don't. You kind of make your choices on that. But, you know, it's all going to be about them gathering data about the kinds of things that you're searching and then using that to tailor Amazon marketing to you.
Well, because this thing's on all the time, isn't it? It's listening all the time and sending data back all the time. So, I mean,
I don't worry about that as much. I don't think they're going to be like listening in on your conversations, but they're definitely, and you're going to have to agree that they're going to record and capture everything that you do ask of it. You know, I don't think it's going to be like a passing conversation, but if you're interacting with it deliberately, they're definitely going to be capturing using that data.
My point last night on the big show was there's kind of an adult section, isn't there, in Amazon, where you can go and get adult toys and that kind of stuff. And I was just thinking, if this thing switched on and listening and you have an argument with your partner and then your partner calls you an arsehole, whether you're going to get loads of butt plugs start showing up in your timeline on Amazon. Because don't forget, it's tied to your account, isn't it? It's your username account. So if it hears something that it thinks you might like...
Here's the thing. For my first reaction to it was that it's basically a $200 Siri replacement or you know, Google Now or whatever it is. And who's going to spend $200 just for this thing, which you can just whip out your phone or your tablet or something and just use it that way. And not only that, but you got the visual feedback on your device. So I don't really see a point to it. If it was $50, I might buy it as a novelty. Mm-hmm. But for $200,
To be fair, it's only $100 to Prime members.
And right.
I would imagine that most people buying this would be Prime members.
I suppose, but I figured for $200, I can go to Best Buy. I can get a Nexus 7 and just do like Google, whatever it is. I don't know.
Google Now. Yeah.
Google Now. Yeah. No, what was it? Hey, Google. No, what are they? What is their voice command?
Okay.
Alexa.
Okay. Go, okay, right. Google. Okay. Google. So I could do it that way. And then I could just like mount it on a stand or something on top of my microwave, which is on our counter. And then, you know, just do it that way. I just don't see the point of this thing.
I think that I was quite interested in the concept of it as a, you know, a room speaker device, because I think they're pushing that as well, because it has got, you know, quite a decent speaker setup stuck in there. So in some respects, it could be sort of like a cheaper alternative to something like a Sonos system. And then, you know, the voice command on top of it is just like an extra, really.
Bonus, yeah.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, we've got this in all our devices now. We've got it in the Nexuses and that, and you know, in Siri and our iPhones, etc. But I have to say, there is something quite, I think there's something quite interesting about having a device that you don't have to switch on. It's always there, because you know, when you see the old science fiction films, it used to always be, you never used to press anything or do anything. You just used to speak out into the void, and your computer would respond back to you. So. You know, I'm quite interested and fascinated in how that might play out, but whether or not it's actually going to be a viable product and people actually buy it, I don't really know. I noticed in the advertisement they've sort of got one in every room. Well, yeah. You know, it might be a bit overkill, but I think it's, it might have some legs in the fact that, you know, you can control it just by speaking to it.
I predict they'll be giving these away to Prime members in a year. You know, it'll just be like, we'll send you one.
Remember, I don't, does anybody use voice commands on their Mac anymore? I used to be heavily into that years ago, and then Apple sort of just like let it drift off. And it used to be great to be able to say, I forgot, like, what was it, Mac? Oh, you used to make your own commands.
You could say whatever you wanted to be the trigger word, yeah. Right.
I used to be able to say, like, open iTunes or something like that. And then after a few years, Apple has sort of dropped the ball on voice recognition on the Mac. And I heard Siri was supposed to actually be a part of 10.9, and that never happened. So it would be nice to have that always-on functionality on your Mac. And why would you not? Because why would you need this little speaker device from Amazon, this Echo thing, when people have computers and they have devices? The thing is, the always-on thing is a good idea, but maybe it's just me, because maybe some people don't use their computers the same way that I do, but my computer is always on. I go to bed, it's always on, because I have, like, IRC running, and I catch up with what people have said during the day. So for me, it would be nice to come down here in the morning and say, okay, Mac, or, you know, whatever, do it that way. So for me, that's why I don't understand the appeal of the Echo. Because I would just want to do it on these devices that I already own.
Well, and you want it integrated with the platform that you have. So the thing about the Amazon thing is it's only integrated really with Amazon.
True.
So if you're a Google person, or you're a Windows person, or you're a Mac person, it's not going to, you know, there's limits to what it can do if it's not integrated with your computer and your home automation system. So, you know, I fully believe that this is all kinds of technology that Apple and the next generation Apple TV is going to be in there. We're going to have Siri in the Apple TV. It's going to integrate with HomeKit. It's going to integrate with all these other devices that you have. And that becomes really, really interesting. So I'm happy to see Amazon doing it, because I think it's going to push Apple and Google to kind of, you know, even further think about this stuff. I think they already were, and they already have plans for this stuff. But again, it's sort of driving the market. So the fact that they're out there now and they're public is only going to benefit all of us.
I think there's a trust issue as well, isn't there? Because I think mentioned before, you know, I probably wouldn't trust a machine from Amazon or from Google to be listening constantly, whereas I might trust a device from Apple, because they would probably take great steps to make sure that, you know, only at the certain point when you invoke the device would it actually send stuff back to the center, whereas you're never quite sure with Google or with Amazon just exactly what they're doing, and you know what the real reason for the actual device is. You know, as you mentioned before, just piping stuff back to home base and analyzing it, even though it might be anonymous, you never know.
Well, from what I understand, it's speak and spell. Because you can, one of the features of this thing is you can actually say to it, how do you spell supercalifragilisticexpialidocious?
Really?
Sure. And it says S-U-B-E-R.
The correct, oh God, I used to have one of those. They were great.
So I do think it's safe to say that this thing is going to be every bit the success that the Fire Phone has been.
Yes. Pretty much. There's a good point here in one of the comments. What do I do if I've got a daughter called Alexa?
When you set it up, it said in the thing, when you set it up, you it's just like it was with the Mac, you assign it a name. So the name that's in the video is not set in stone.
Good.
So you can make the trigger word be whatever you want, it sounds like.
That's forward thinking for you. Brilliant. Microsoft has launched new Office apps for iPhone, makes creating and basic editing free on iOS effectively. I've got to say, the reason I put this story in is I've heard nothing bad about Office 365 on Mac. Everyone that I've spoken to that's used it says, at worst, they say, yeah, it's all right. And if at best, they go, do you know what? It's actually really good.
Mm-hmm.
They don't seem to be cocking this up at all. And then with the band release as well, Microsoft did, and Jeff Gamet spoke last night on The Big Show and said, you know, the band is something that is not the Microsoft that he grew up with in any way, shape, or form in terms of openness.
They're not making the best of this. The other thing that happened this week is for 365 subscribers, they made OneDrive unlimited.
Yes.
Yeah, I saw that.
That's huge.
Yeah.
Yeah, Microsoft under Satya Nadella is doing a lot of things right. And I pinned a piece this week saying that I thought that Dropbox integration with Office for iOS shows that Microsoft is thinking differently about things. You know, this is a company that used to rely on the hegemony of Office and Windows to gain share into new markets and to leverage itself into new markets. And it was always able to use one or the other as a cudgel. And that strategy has utterly failed in the era of iPhone and iPad in particular and Android. But Steve Ballmer refused to let it go. He still thought that he could use Office as a cudgel. And, you know, it was limited to Surface, and still no one wanted to buy a Surface. And it's just Steve Ballmer's last few years, I think, were a catastrophe. And Satya Nadella is truly doing things differently. And I've got hope that he could turn this company into a viable, innovative force to be reckoned with.
I think you might be right. Yeah.
I would agree.
The thing that always struck me as well with Office for Mac when you bought it, if you bought Office for Mac, the home student version, it was like £100. And it didn't come with Outlook. So you thought, oh, well, actually, what if I want Outlook? Well, if you want Outlook, it's £180.
You're like, Outlook?
Who's going to pay £80 for frigging Outlook? And that was the only difference between the two. It's like you've got no touch reality whatsoever here. And then the seven different flavors of Windows crap that was going on as well, as a media center wouldn't work with the Home Edition and all that kind of crap. You're like, give over. I think this boy has really got a handle. He's doing a great job so far. I've not seen them put a foot wrong in what they're doing. And I think maybe losing the Nokia badge with the Windows phone as well, I think that might actually be a good thing in the end. I think a lot of people are saying, no, it's not good, but I think it will be. I think it'll be a real positive for them in the end to get that Microsoft branding all the way through everything, right the way through from Xbox, right through Skype, right through to the end user. But yeah, good stuff. Well done, Nutella. There's another spread for you. See? Researchers discovered new WireLurker malware affecting Macs and iOS devices in China. Infected both macOS and iOS over the course of the past 6 months. The researchers say that a WireLurker, which has targeted users in China, heralds a new era in malware attacking Apple's desktop and mobile platforms. Serious issue or a bit of a storm in a teacup?
Apple's already shut it down.
It's dead. It's gone. It's on the end of it, right? Next story. Then.
Apple has shut down the affected apps. Right. Today, that Apple hasn't shut down the actual problem yet.
True.
I mean, this is a big deal, in my opinion. The fact that this threat is even possible, let alone that it's actually in the wild, is it's a tremendous issue for users, especially in China. And I think that Apple just has absolutely got to close this particular vulnerability as quickly as possible. I truly find this particular vulnerability scary.
So, I mean, what Adam's just said, compared to what you're saying, Brian, then just draw the distinction.
Right,
the fact that Apple has done, what actions has Apple taken, and what action do they still need to take?
Apple has flagged the apps that are affected by the Mac apps that are affected by this vulnerability so that they won't launch. In theory, that would keep WireLurker from infecting any new iOS devices or infecting any iOS device on an affected machine. But new apps could be affected, and there would continue to be attacks made through this particular hole until Apple actually closes the hole. And I mean, WireLurker allows an infected Mac to infect a connected iPhone over a USB connection, whether or not that iPhone is jailbroken. I mean, that's a huge deal.
It is. It's always been the jailbroken community that suffered, hasn't it? Not.
Yeah, but this affects non-jailbroken phones.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the thing.
Adam, you were going to say something there?
No. I mean, Brian's absolutely right. I was just going to mention that, you know, what's Apple's shut down is the Trojan part, which is, you know, that's how it gets installed. But, you know, like Brian's pointing out, it doesn't solve the root problem.
Mm.
I mean, and we have things too, like, you know, RootPipe was also out there this week. And that's another one. I mean, you need to have certain things happening, but, you know, there are holes out there that, you know, are 0-day sort of exploits. And, I think overall Apple's done an okay job of being on top of it, but I mean, they need to be really on top of this stuff. And I think what we're seeing this week just, you know, continues to prove there's going to be more and more of this kind of stuff. And really what it comes down to is how does the company respond and how quickly do they respond? So one thing I don't like that Apple does is they'll hear about these security exploits and they'll have, say, you know, 8.1.1 is already out there, right? So, you know, they may roll it into 8.1.1, but I think more and more we're going to have to get to a point where they need to just issue a quick security patch for certain things and get that out and not wait for that next exploit. Because a lot of times they hide behind the fact that, well, this isn't in the wild yet and, you know, those sorts of things. But, you know, it's going to start to happen that these exploits are going to get discovered and people are going to immediately start taking advantage of them. And that's kind of sounds what happened with this one in China, right? I mean, it's already out there. It's already in the wild. So they even more have to deal with it, to Brian's point.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Last story then is just to talk about the Apple Watch. Reportedly, the steel is going to start at $500, which is not as bad as I thought. I thought it was a bit near the 1,000 mark. And the gold is going to start at 4,000. But if it's really gold, I suppose, that's not horrific either. I was very kindly sent a Pebble watch by Mac OCD off Twitter, and I've been wearing it. I've got a new strap for it as well, because the other one was too small for my wrist. I bought an orange one, so if anyone would like an orange strap that would fit their Pebble, who's got bigger wrists, drop me an email. First one to send me an email, we'll get that free of charge in the post. I've got to say, I wore it because I wanted to see what it was like to have a watch linked to my phone, and also in preparation for when there's an Apple Watch coming out, whether I'd want to buy it or not. And I've got to say, I really enjoy the experience of wearing this. I still don't enjoy wearing a watch. It still bugs me occasionally when I'm typing and things like that. But
yeah, me too.
I love the fact, like, last night, Ashley was dialing into the show, and I'd sent her a tweet saying, what's your Skype handle? And just in case it wasn't the obvious. And she sent me a message back, but my phone was unreachable over the other side, this side of the desk, and I was that side of the desk operating the computer. And it buzzed, and I was like, oh, you bugger, because I can't get me... no, hang on a second. And then my wrist buzzed, and I'm like, there we go. I can read that, put it in. Thank you very much. And I really enjoy it. I think there's a certain element of the Apple Watch, though, that makes me think, does it do too much? Because actually what I want is fairly simple functionality. I don't want to see my entire picture library on my phone. Thank you very much. And Apple could be in danger of trying to overcomplicate the phone rather than keeping it reasonably simple.
I completely disagree with the premise of your worry, because we don't yet know how the Apple Watch is going to work in the wild.
Yeah, okay.
Watch Kit isn't right? out yet.
But I think that from what we've seen, Apple has designed this thing for it to do the things that we want it to do and not necessarily try to do everything. If someone wants to do everything, that's one thing. But that's been my take on the specific worry that you have. But you know, until we get it, we just don't know yet.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. I have to agree with you on that one, because that's why I'm eagerly awaiting WatchKit, because I at least want, I'm assuming there's going to be an emulator. There's going to have to be something so that we can, you know, see what this thing is like. And I've also, I have an old Apple Watch that I bought years ago at, I guess it was maybe a Macworld or something like that. It's just watch with an Apple logo on it. And I haven't worn a watch in maybe 15 years or something, because I'm the same thing. I have the same problem where it just gets in my way and it just annoys me. I put a jacket and I have to put it over, and when I'm typing and it jiggles, I hate wearing watches. But I'm going to try this out and see how it is. And I'm not going to buy the $500 one. I'm going to buy the cheapest one there is, because I'm going to develop for it. So I need one, but I'm not 100% convinced that this is going to be the next big thing. Maybe it will be. Maybe I'm completely wrong about it, but
that's a sensible reservation.
Yeah. I'm reserved about this. Maybe it'll be awesome. I don't know.
Yeah, see, I've not worn a watch since the iPhone came out, basically. I mean, whenever I need to know the time, I just, you know, have a look at the iPhone. But I did get the Pebble watch, and although I don't use it that much now, when it first came out, I did start using it. And I have to say, I quite enjoyed using it, because it was quite nice just to glance at your wrist to have a look at the time or information. And I think with the Apple Watch, I think that's the sort of, you know, people are so used now to looking at the phones all the time. I think it is... A more lightweight way of accessing your information is just by glancing at your wrist to see what's on there. And, you know, again, I think what they've done, or what they will do, is, you know, they will make it pretty much like the iPad, so that it's a blank canvas and you can do pretty much what you know, you can use it to do lots and lots and lots of different things. And people will use it in different ways as well. So when it first came out, I was a little bit disappointed at the watch, because I think because it was actually a watch, I expected it to be some sort of other wearable device, but, you know, a watch. But now that I have time to think about it, and I've seen the presentation, not just on the day when it was out, but, you know, I've seen it again since. I'm quite optimistic that they are building this sort of this new platform, basically, for Apple products. And I think, provided they don't screw it up, which they've got a track record of not doing, I think it should be very successful.
I do have, so I'm a watch guy. Is that showing up? There we go.
Yeah.
I'm a watch guy. I'm baffled. I'm almost wordless here, but I'm baffled at the gold Apple Watch.
Yeah, me too.
And that's because the idea of spending $4,000 or $5,000 on a watch is not an issue for me. Not that I have $4,000 or $5,000 at the moment to buy a watch, but that's beside the point. Watches that cost $4,000, $5,000, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 have an inherent value that lasted even through the quartz era, because these watches maintain their usefulness in perpetuity. Mm-hmm. And the problem with spending $4,000 on an Apple Watch is that it will not maintain its perpetuity, its usefulness of perpetuity. It probably won't maintain its usefulness for two or three generations of Apple Watch.
Right.
So it seems to me that the gold Apple Watch should revert to its value in precious metal almost immediately.
Yeah.
And so it's hard for me to see spending $4,000 on a device that is going to be for sure worth $1,200 in 2 years or 3 years.
Do you,
and so it just leaves me confused. I'm perplexed.
the one theory that's been floated to me by people who have emailed me and said, I'm a watch fan. I buy watches. I have $20,000 watches in my collection, blah, 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 blah. When I've brought this subject up, is some of them have this idea that there may be this ability to, in the future, Apple may allow you to take your gold watch in there and swap the innards. They think like there's almost like a module that you'll walk into the Apple store and they'll just service it and they'll pop in the new version and you'll pay X, you know, a lot less, where you're not paying for the metal again. You're just basically paying for an upgrade.
Apple is certainly has a track record of thinking differently. I'm sorry, I'm going to rephrase that. Apple has certainly shown that with the Apple Watch, it is thinking completely differently than it has about any other product. To wit, the various models, the various bands, the different materials that it's using. These are all things that are very, very new for Apple. But the idea that the next generation of Apple Watch, let alone two generations of Apple Watch, and I'm talking about the innards at this point, or three generations, are going to be made to retroactively fit inside a previous form factor, I have a difficult time seeing that.
Me too. I'm just throwing it out there. This is the response that I've received from people that are, you know, and again, I'm a tech guy. I'm used to having devices that are obsolete in 2 to 3 years and need to be replaced. Or, you know, if you want to stay on the bleeding edge.
Right.
So that's
which
a concept
makes
for us.
The steel one or the aluminum one make perfect sense to tech guys like us.
Right.
Right. We spend our $350, we spend our $500, and it's going to become worth less than that probably relatively quickly. It's going to maintain its value better than any other, smartwatch on the planet, but it's still going to lose value. But again, with the gold one, spending $4,000 or $5,000 on it, and having that plummet to, you know, about $1,200, that was the first estimate I saw on the gold value in this thing.
There's not many watches you would buy as an investment, though, is there?
Well, most mechanical watches are investments.
Not many,
yeah.
Though, in the global scheme of things.
Most mechanical watches are investments.
No.
Most watches that you're spending $5,000 on up for are effectively investments because they're going to maintain or increase
value.
Thank you.
So the point would be, for high-value watches, you might buy them as an investment, but most watches are not high-value watches, and most watches are not an investment anyway.
But
once you get over $5,000, then maybe you're buying it as an investment, but you don't see this as being an investment. I'm just trying to translate.
I agree. I don't see it as an investment either. If you're going to spend $4,000 or $5,000 on a watch and you have absolutely no idea what the value of it, be it on your wrist or resale value of it in 3 years, maybe even 2 years, it seems very risky to me. So that's another reason why I'm just going to buy the cheap one first off, and we'll see how it goes after that.
So I mean, is the idea, you think, Brian, then the gold, you know, if the way it is there, it's really Apple just playing to that, you know, 1 or 2% of their market that is just, you know, it's a vanity play. It's like, I've got the gold one. It's a status.
That makes the most sense. I mean, it's definitely a jewelry play at that point. But again, with jewelry, that's where I end up getting a bit back towards the confused side. When you're spending $4,000 or $5,000 on a piece of jewelry, it's still going to be worth $4,000 or $5,000 in a few years,
if not more.
If not yet, depending on, of course, obviously inflation and gold price and whatnot. But that is not the case with this device. There are people who will buy this. I said this on the Apple Context Machine this week. There are people who will buy the gold Apple Watch for sure. Apple will probably even sell a lot of them in certain circles. But for those of us who are buying it for the technology, from what we've seen so far, I could not possibly recommend buying the gold one.
Well, I think that's the psyche of the fanboy, though. For those of us who are buying Apple products for the technology, we cannot compute in our own minds the idea of purchasing a watch for the same value as a fairly high spec Mac Pro. Because adored with the technology, we would spend that kind of money on a spec'd out Mac Pro rather than a watch in a heartbeat.
I mean, the thing with the gold watch, is it going to be a rarity? Is it going to be a limited edition? Is that the way they can possibly get it to maintain its value by, you know, having as a very limited edition because they're not going to sell tons of them, are they? I mean, let's face it. I mean, the market for the, you know, an expensive high-end mechanical watch isn't that great. So I don't know. Just might be a way they could pitch it as a limited edition, and, you know, there's 10,000 available or something. And
the alarm bell that's always gone off in my head, though, is the fact that this thing needs your phone. It cannot really exist much without your phone present to it. And at certain points, the OSs will have to separate, because the OS will not be backtracked to your $4,000 watch to a certain point. So let's say that there's iOS, watch iOS version 1. What point does your device then stop taking the upgrades to watch iOS to then link in with iOS 8, which has now progressed onto iOS 13, and therefore you've got a watch that can no longer talk to the new phone that you have that has progressed. So even if you buy this thing and it stays and it's current and it's valuable, at what point do Apple walk away from it and say, you know what, we're not supporting it anymore? And that's the big problem, is the fact that all I want it to do is tell the time and just link to basic stuff on my phone. Those will step
together.
You've got
to bear in mind, though, I mean, we're talking, yeah, it's a watch and it's $4,000. I mean, Apple do sell $4,000 products now, you know, and they don't have this worry about Mac Pros, and they don't have this worry about high-end laptops and stuff like that. Are they considering it as just another type of product, and, you know, a high-value product that possibly has got a limited shelf life?
But I would just caveat that, though, Dom, by saying I agree, but the difference is, my 2008 MacBook Pro here, which can no longer run Yosemite, so it's out at Mavericks. That's the end of it. Will still run by itself using Mavericks, whereas my watch will not run without my phone. And at what point will the phone leave my watch out of it, and my watch then becomes completely frigging useless? It doesn't even tell the time.
But I think that'll be fixed with subsequent generations.
Yeah, I think so. I think they'll decouple the requirement to have a phone and a watch eventually, and eventually the watch will be standalone. And it might take two or three generations, but it's probably going to be done in software.
I have a hard time in my own mind when I have conversations with anyone, as much as respected as they are in my eyes, when they say, yeah, but they'll fix that in the second edition. Off. I spent good money buying this piece of tech. You will not fix it in the next generation. I'm awfully sorry. You'll provide it now.
The idea behind the watch is eventually, I would think, that, you know, the watch is going to be a platform on its own. They're continually miniaturizing. Okay, it's like Blip now with the phones, because they've gone bigger. But, you know, eventually the power that's currently in your iPhone 6 Plus will be in. I mean, you know, it's definite. The power that's currently in your iPhone will end up in your watch. There's no question about that because of the, you know, the increases in technology. So yes, they will. Okay. They might be able to fix it in an update of software perhaps, but it might need some new innards, but eventually a phone will, you know, be as powerful, or even more powerful.
I totally agree with that, Don, and I absolutely accept that. But at that point, my $4,000 watch that I purchased won't even work by itself.
Well, we don't know that, though. You see, it's we're talking about, as usual, you know, it's all rumor and speculation and the unknown. We really don't know what their strategy is for whether or not there will be, perhaps not the whole of the innards, but something that you can put in your phone that will actually take up to, you know, revision two, revision three. Yeah. You know, will revision two or revision three be enough for it to work on its own without needing an iPhone? It could well be, but I don't know.
I think these are really valid questions that Apple haven't tried to answer, and their keynote was
they might have the answers, but they just let us in on them. Right. Yet.
Yeah, but we don't know what their strategy is, don't know how far it's gone. And actually, the keynote that they had was fairly devoid of any real kind of specification or integration or lifecycle information.
Of course,
you know.
So. Mm-hmm. I think if they want to sell the $4,000 Apple Watch, they need to do the same thing they did with the 20th anniversary Mac and have a concierge bring it to you. Put it on your wrist for you and show you how it works. That'll sell it.
There we go. This podcast and all the others is brought to you by a whole pile of sources. One is the Network Union. They're absolutely brilliant. They've supported us quite heavily with Patreon for quite a while now. What do they do? Well, if you've got WAN, MPLS, SIPs, any of those kind of systems, then these are the guys to interlink with your service. They run for BT systems here in the UK, and they also work with Masergy, who are based in Dallas and support in the US as well. They are a service which fits between you and your provider to just tweak your service and make sure it's absolutely perfectly correct for you. Now then, here's the thing. I mean, you know, if you're a decision maker in one of those organizations, then get in touch with the network union, go through our sponsors page, britishnetnetwork.com/sponsors, and you will get that service. If you're not, and you're a consultant who's working within a business in the US for Mass Audio or within the UK for BT, and you know that the person there could benefit from the network union services and you love doing this show as well, then please pass on the details to the network union. So if you can either pass on the name of the decision maker, that would be great. And if you can't, just pass the name of the network union on to the decision maker and then let network union know that you sent through some contact information for them. We'd be really grateful, because even just saying, you know, I'm pushing your name around is in some respects, you know, a validation of the effort the network union are putting back into our network. So we do appreciate that. Please, please, please support them if you possibly can. And of course, UK2, who we've had some stats in the last couple of weeks, thanks to Paul Wheatley, who's written a fantastic program. It's a bespoke application which runs on our server. And we were gobsmacked to find out that we were 60% video for this show. We thought we were kind of, you know, maybe 30% at best, but 60% of the downloads of this show are video. And we're getting 25,000 downloads per episode of Mac. So thanks to Paul for writing that. And we've always wondered why UK2 were really happy with the relationship with us. And now I think we've figured out why. I think they're doing rather well out of it. But they've looked after us when we were nobody, which is, you know, why there's got a lot of loyalty for them. We get unlimited bandwidth, which means we can deal with that many downloads, and we also get unlimited storage. So every single show we've ever made, you can go on our servers and you can find it. Just keep going back to the older, right the way back to the very first ones that we posted. Please check out UK2. Loads of offers for people if you go through BTN's connection and use the offer codes that are there. They're well worth it. And what are you doing on the 6th of December? It's the Gamer Show Quiz and the Northern Bash, and it's at Tweed Bank Hall in the Scottish Borders. I'll be driving up here on the Saturday, leaving Brighton early from my house. I've got one seat left in my car if anyone would like to come with us. And we're all going to drive up, have a load of fun, play some games, do the Gamer Show Quiz, order in a curry, bring your own booze. Unfortunately, it's not a catered event as such like the Southern Bash is, but we'll have a really good time and have some good fun. And there's some guest houses and that kind of stuff in the local area. It's about 30 miles south of Edinburgh, I think, so it's not a million miles to get there. So 6th of December, book a ticket. There's a banner on the homepage. Click on that. And if you click that banner, you can also order tickets for the Summer Bash. They're already up there for sale. So 4th of July, get yourself a ticket for the Southern Bash as well as. Cool. Now then, have we got any cool things? Donald McAllister, start us off, mate.
Right, well, I've not been on for a while, so this might have already come up before, but I'll mention it anyway, because it's always always worth plugging it. Thing called BitTorrent Sync. We all know about BitTorrent, the distributed method of sending files around.
Which is perfectly legal.
Pardon?
Which is perfectly legal.
Yes, yes, it is. Yes. I've used it many a times. Well, they've now got a product called BitTorrent Sync, which enables you to set up a client on a number of different machines and transparently sync between all those machines, sync folders and sync files between them. It's very, very good, actually. It works extremely well. It's sort of like Dropbox, but you haven't got the central place where the files have to go to. It's a peer-to-peer sharing mechanism. So you can set up a secure sync client on one machine and then a sync client on the other machine, and send an invitation across to the other machine, and they will just sync merrily away. And it works terrifically, and it's free as well.
Excellent. Good one, mate.
BitTorrent Sync.
Good stuff. Thank you very much. Michael, did you know about the cool thing?
Yes, I did know about the cool thing. My cool thing is something that I just recently discovered. It may not appeal to a lot of people, but because I live near an airport, for years we've been living in this area, and planes fly over our house all the time. I always wondered, where are they going? Where are those planes going? It's obvious from the patterns that they're flying off to Europe or something, but sometimes they don't. So I found, quite accidentally, there's an app for the iPhone called Flight Tracker 24.
Yes.
Flight Radar 24. Hold on, let me just bring it up.
Radar.
But Flight Radar 24. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Brilliant.
And what it'll do is it'll show you your area and all the planes that are flying over your house. And then you just tap on a plane and it'll say, this one's going to Houston. This one's going to China. This one's going to London. This one's going to France. It's more interesting than anything, unless you're really tracking. I do remember how I got it. I was tracking my iPhone 6 Plus. And that's how I found out about this app. And so if you live near an airport and you always wondered what planes are flying over your house, that's a great app. $2.99.
Excellent, mate. It is a good app. I have it myself, and it's well worth the money. Mm-hmm. No question. Most definitely. Sorry about my phone going off in the middle of that. I do apologize. We did have Sarah on. Sarah used to come on the big show, and she saw the app once. She said, "My God, isn't the sky really crowded?" And you're like, "Yeah, but on the size of the image that you've got there, Sarah, the plane's nearly the size of Berkshire. So, I mean, that's why it kind of looks crowded. It's not that bad when you zoom in."
Is that it'll give you a cockpit view too?
Really?
Yes, on Google Earth, it'll give you a cockpit view.
Oh, that's fun.
Oh man, Google have got a flight simulator, haven't they? That flies through. What's it? That flies through Google Maps.
All right, I'll have to.
Google have got a flight simulator that flies through. It's bloody hard to control. I've had a go, but but no, they have got one. Definitely, good pick, Adam. What have you got for us, sir?
I'm going to pick something, and it's. I'm not sure what it is yet. I'm still trying to figure it out. But there is an app that showed up on the App Store yesterday. I haven't played it too much, but I'm going to pick it just based on the UI and the visuals of the thing and just the concept. And it's called The Sailor's Dream. And I guess it's from the same developers. If you know about Year Walk or Device 6 or Bumpy Road. But what it is it appears to be like a visual interactive story. And it takes place in this dreamy kind of ocean environment with ships and different buildings on cliffs and stuff like that. And you go in there and you explore it. There also seems to be a music element to it. So you're trying to sort of uncover these songs and collect these songs and things like that. They call it a narrative experience. So it's text, it's visuals, it's audio, and just, you know, it's very much built for the swipe interface on your phone. So sort of how you navigate around is through various swipes and touches and things like that. And it's just beautiful. You know, I love beautiful sort of artsy pieces like this. I haven't quite figured out, you know, the game element or if there is much of a game element there, but it had really interesting things like, you'll get to a point where you get to text and you're reading bits and pieces of this story and sort of discovering it organically. And as it unfolds, you're reading the text and you get to the bottom and there's a print icon. And if you want, you can send a print to your printer and it actually prints out sort of the visual artwork of the thing that you've been reading about. So there's really clever, interesting things like that in here. And it just showed up on the App Store. I think it was, I'm trying to remember the price. I want to say it was $1.99 or $2.99. It wasn't too expensive. And it is just gorgeous. Simogo.com is the website. That's the developer, S-I-M-O-G-O. Simogo. S-I-M-O-G-O. And it's called The Sailor's Dream.
I mean,
visually, it's gorgeous.
The Verge have described this as incredibly relaxing. Best way to chill out on an iPad.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, someone in the chat room mentioned Myst. You know, it's very much Myst-like, and I like these kinds of games that you know, sort of combine art and music and storytelling and just into a sort of explorative experience, right? You just kind of poke around. You don't really know what you're getting into, but you just sort of discover things, and it's a lot of fun.
Excellent. Good pick, mate. Like that. That's all brilliant. Mr. Chaffin, do you have a cool thing for us?
I do. It's not new, but it's new to me. And, you know, since the whole world revolves around me, I'm guessing that's okay. It's called Find the City. And it's a game where you find the city. Sounds silly, perhaps, but I enjoy geography. And what it does is it gives you a globe and it tells you to find a city in a country and go. And you have to, you know, zoom in on the country to be able to find it. You get more points the closer you actually get. The one thing I don't like about it is that it gives you an arrow that points you towards the country itself. And I'm enough of a geography snob that I wish I didn't have that cheat for countries that I don't actually know where they are. Anyway, it's a ton of fun, and it's free. The way they're doing it is the free version lets you play some, and then for 99 cents, you can unlock the full game. You can challenge people. You can just challenge yourself, play against yourself if you want. It's a lot of fun.
I have a globe that does that, like a physical globe.
Oh, that's
it's awesome. It's got a touch.
Super cool.
Yeah, they sold it at, you know, Sharper Image way back in the day. We've had it for years, but this kind of game is a lot of fun because it really does teach you, you know, teach you the geography if you don't know it, because you got to hunt and pack and find these things.
They do a version for find the city as well, don't they, for the US? Just seen that.
Take it.
They do one for find the city in the US as well. Find the US city.
Ah,
same idea, as well as.
Yeah, this one is by Brillosoft for what
this
that's one, worth.
This one's for the world, and they do a version for finding US cities as well. Brilliant. I've kept that up because I'm going to go and get both of these. So I haven't got a pick of the week. I've got a pass of the week, and my pass is the SkyGo application and the support for it, because I love SkyGo. I think it's a brilliant innovation. You can watch Sky Television down on your media device, and you're off and running. And today I had a real problem with it because I updated to Yosemite on a device that had got this on it. And SkyGo said, oh, no, this is a new device. This isn't registered, so you need to register it. So I deselected the device and then re-registered it. And then I updated to 8.1, and that didn't work either. So it then wouldn't let me re-register 8.1 because you only have to change one device per month. So I've only got one computer out of what I should have, four, that let me watch stuff. And I rang them up for tech support, and they said, oh, no, that's Silverlight's problem. No, this isn't a Silverlight issue. Yeah, no, it's definitely Silverlight, because Silverlight's not compatible with Yosemite Mavericks or Mountain Lion. I've never heard such
that's
bollocks.
That's not true.
I've never heard
that's
such bollocks in all my life.
I haven't. Let me try Netflix. I just installed Yosemite last night because Wirecast finally upgraded, so try this. But yeah, I haven't heard anything about Silverlight.
I can save you the look, mate. I can save you the look.
I use Silverlight.
Silverlight works fine on everything I've got. And I just said to the guy, I have never heard such bollocks in all my life. So, Sky, sort your application out, because the other thing that's wrong with it is you have to sign in four or five times to do a day's watching a sport on the thing. It will just blip out and then it will come back on and it says, oh no, you've got to sign in. And that happens. They're secure to the point of it being dysfunctional. It's that bad. So
it's,
my pass of the week
working for me.
Is no, SkyGo.
It does not work.
Because A, it's such a pain in the ass because it's overprotected to the point of being unusable. And B, your support people talk the biggest pile of bollocks I've ever heard in my entire life. I said, how come? I said to him, how come on the web browser then, when I log in to manage devices, it shows I've only got two when actually I've got four? And he said, oh, yeah, that's a Silverlight issue. No. I'm on your website, dude. It's got absolutely nothing to do with Silverlight. Stop playing the Silverlight card because, A, it's bollocks, and, B, it doesn't apply.
I have a pass, too.
Yes. Oh, give over. Yeah. Just you'll get
Stop
used to it.
Spinning your toxic waste over here.
No, just you want to try. Now you've tried it and you go, okay, it's not the end of the world. You just try half the entire packet spread on it in a
thick
layer and then go for that.
Somebody in the chat room said earlier, beef. You know, I was trying to think of the flavor. It does kind of taste to me like, you know, eating a beef bouillon cube.
It's a little bit like that, yeah. I'll give you that. But the Vegemite is even beefier. But I've got to say now, I've had it on toast. It's much better than it was having it off a spoon. So there we go. Where can we get a hold of you, Mr. McAllister?
Well, you can find me over at my usual haunts, over at screencastonline.com, and also on the Twitter as Don McAllister.
Thank you, sir. Excellent. Mike, where are you, sir?
I am at StarMike on Twitter, and you can find all the shows I do at thed20network.com.
Excellent. Mr. Chaffin, where are you?
I am on the Apple Context Machine podcast with Jeff Gamet. And I, of course, am the editor-in-chief over at the Mac Observer at macobserver.com.
I reckon that Jeff Gamet is on so many podcasts, we need to do a 7 degrees of separation thing.
Or, excuse me, I had a little cough there.
We ought to have, what's your Jeff Gamet number? But then I thought about it, and everyone's just going to be one. Because he's been on every podcast with everyone.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
My Jeff Garrett number's one. Some bloke I met down the pub, Jeff Garrett number one. And last but by no means least, Adam Christensen, where are you?
I am at MacCast on Twitter, MacCast.com, MacCast on iTunes, and also the iOS show with, Jeff Gamet.
Yeah, you see?
And Michael Johnston.
You've got a Gamet rating of one.
.com. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, definitely. That's, we got a title right at the end there. That'll be it. My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. We'll be back again next Friday. We've got Mac and Big next Friday, which is moving from Thursday night. And we'll try to be less erratic with the podcasting. But I'm never giving over the reign of this to any other one else. I promise you.
Especially not Will Green.
Have a great weekend. And whatever you're doing next Tuesday at 11 o'clock, stand still, shut up. 2 minutes, that's all it takes. Doesn't matter what your sex is, what your religion is, or what your creed is, or anything. You can stand still for 2 minutes. See you soon.